Chapter 10. A tough octave to follow. Later that day, the older students start arriving. The Mistwick campus, which had seemed so huge and empty and quiet, now fills up with noisy kids who call out to each other, greeting friends they haven't seen all summer. They walk around like they own the campus, knowing exactly where to go and how to get there. I, on the other hand, feel like an actual guppy, flitting between schools of much bigger, louder fish. But that's okay, because all I want right now is to blend in until the maestros can't possibly tell me apart from everyone else. The perfect Mistwick musician. It helps that we all wear the same uniforms. Navy blue skirts or pants, white knee-high socks, the blue cardigan with the Mistwick crest on the front. Though my uniform doesn't quite fit right. They must have guessed at my measurements. Or maybe they were meant for the other Amelia. The clothes are all too big, so I have to roll up the sleeves of the cardigan. And the shiny black shoes they found for me were too small, so I'm still wearing my old scruffy hiking boots, since standing to play flute for hours each day requires comfy footwear, and I'm not sure who I'm supposed to ask for new shoes. To escape the chaos after our orientation classes end, I go to the library. It's a 3-story building completely made of glass, so it reflects the forest and mountains on every side, blending into the landscape. The moment I set foot through the doors, my whole body relaxes. I can tell at once that this library is going to be my favorite place at Mistwick. On the first floor is regular books, and there are tons of them. I walk up and down the aisles, taking out everything I can find that might help me pass Mrs. LaRue's test, and a few just for fun. My favorites are stories about music craft, of course, adventures about spells gone wrong, biographies of famous maestros, histories of musical incidents that changed the world, like when the Allied Military Symphony defeated the Axis powers in World War II. Or when Leif Erikson, the Viking, found North America by playing a spell he learned from a raven. Or how the ancient Japanese used elemental magic to raise typhoons that repelled the invading Mongolians. When my arms are so full of books I can hardly see over them, I pause and look around. Where are the spells? Hearing a laugh behind me, I turn to see Miss March pushing a cart of books. So she's the dean of students and the librarian, it seems. "Go upstairs," she says. "You'll see." I leave my stack of books on a table, where I'll pick them up on the way down. Then I race up the stairs and find myself in paradise. Spells upon spells upon spells. The entire second floor is devoted to them. For a whole minute, I just stand and gape like a stunned frog. Rows of shelves hold books of spells. Spells on loose paper. Spells rolled into little scrolls and tied with string. Spells of every color and type. Some modern, some hundreds of years old. Classical and jazz and rock and folk. And genres I've never heard of. Spells for full orchestras and solo spells for instruments of every imaginable type. I've never seen so many in one place. I had no idea so many existed. When I can finally move my feet, I roam around, touching them like they're made of the most fragile glass. I could spend a lifetime on just one shelf. There must be a spell in here for everything, and they're just waiting for a musician to come along and bring them to life. Maybe if I fail out of Mistwick, they'll let me stay as a janitor or something. And pay me in library loans. I'd do anything just to never leave this building again.
"Amelia Bethany Jones," says a voice. "You know, I guessed you were a library kind of person."
I turn and see Jai walking over, his violin case slung on his back by its long strap. It's not Bethany. And what's wrong with libraries? You're here.
"Yeah, but not for books.
There are thousands of spells here." He sighs and looks around.
"And I just know they're going to make us learn them all."
"Don't you want to?" I take a deep breath and suck in that wonderful papery smell. "I'm never leaving,
Never, ever, ever, ever. You'll have to drag me out of here with a forklift. He groans. I'm going up to the third floor. Are you coming? Are there more spellbooks on the third floor? Better, he says. There's a computer lab and internet. This is the first I've been able to contact Gran. Before I left, I made her an email account just for this purpose. I write her a quick message telling her I'm fine and how beautiful it is here and about the echo trees. I don't tell her about the other Amelia, or the mixed-up acceptance letter, or my deal with Mrs. LaRue, or that my staying here is all due to some mysterious voice. No one else has mentioned hearing the echo trees talk to them, so I'm not sure it'd be a good idea to bring it up again, especially not to Gran. I'm pretty sure I just imagined the whole thing anyway. The way I see it, there isn't anything she can do to help me, and if she thinks I'm in trouble, she might even make me come home. What harm can come from waiting until after my 2-month test before coming clean? After sending the email, I glance at Jai's computer to see he's engrossed in music videos of rock concerts, with musicians playing so hard their drumsticks break and their guitar strings snap. Rock spells usually produce illusion magic, so the air around them sparks with glittering shapes. Dragons and horses and ocean waves. Entire stories told through music craft. Better than any movie. Jai watches like he's entranced. You taking a rock class? I ask. Huh? He looks up like I startled him, then shakes his head and quickly closes the window. Yeah, right. My dad would only die of embarrassment if he caught me in a rock class. Sighing, he opens a zombie game instead and leans low over the keyboard, his tongue sticking out as he chops heads and limbs with a pixelated machete. Shaking my head, I open the internet and go to a website where people share MusicCraft videos. Then I hesitate, my stomach squeezing. For a minute, I think maybe I'm not brave enough. But then I type quickly before I can change my mind and hit search. She comes up right away. Tall for her age, long dark hair, an absolutely perfect posture. The other Amelia Jones. There are tons of videos of her playing piano, and they all have thousands of views. Amelia Jones playing in Vienna. Amelia Jones playing for the President of the United States. Amelia Jones winning a TV MusicCraft competition. She wasn't just good. She was a legend. I'd probably have heard of her, too, if I watched more TV, but I was always so focused on practicing, I never had much time for it. But even still, her face is kind of familiar, and I think I've seen her on magazines at the grocery store checkout lines. There's a pair of headphones by the computer, and I pop them on and then play one of the videos. 3 minutes later, I realize the video ended 30 seconds ago and I'm still sitting in shock. The other Amelia was good. Like, really, really good. No wonder she got accepted into Mistwick. She played better than most adults, even as well as most maestros. And though piano seemed to be her specialty, she could play dozens of instruments, all of them with the same level of perfection. There's a video of her playing a spell that fills an entire auditorium with light, and another where she plays in a hospital ward for a sick little boy. In minutes, he jumps out of his bed, fully healed by her spell. It seems her specialty was healing spells, curing people who everyone thought were beyond hope. What would it be like to have that kind of power? To be loved by so many people? I scroll through the comments. Angel. Prodigy. A gift from heaven. The best young pianist in the world. Farther down, there are newer comments, which take a different tone. I'm still in shock. I can't believe she's gone. It's so unfair. I heard it was murder. They say they never even found her body. Those comments make me feel sick. So I go to close the window. But then my eye snags on something that makes me pause. I click it, and the screen fills with another video of Amelia.
But this time, instead of a grand concert hall, she's in a living room, dressed in pajamas. She's playing some kind of illusion spell on a white grand piano. Every few seconds, she looks up at someone across the room and laughs, but I can't see who it is. Finally, the camera moves just slightly to get a better angle of Amelia's face, and then I see her. Darby. She's also in her pajamas, so I guess they were having a sleepover or something. And Darby is waving a baton, like she's conducting Amelia. The illusion spell is focused on her, making her hair turn all different colors. I stare at the Darby in the video. She seems like a whole different person. Happy, fun, even silly. She makes a goofy face, and the two laugh their heads off without Amelia ever missing a note. She follows Darby's direction, playing faster and slower. Finally, the video ends with the pair of them standing on the piano bench and taking bows. Judging by the date on the video, it was taken just a few months before Amelia died. Letting out a shaky breath, I realize Jai is watching. Meanwhile, his game avatar is getting mauled by zombies.
"I remember her now," he says. "That's why your name sounded familiar to me at the audition. She was good."
"She was beyond good," says another voice. We both turn, and my stomach drops. Darby stands there, holding her shakuhachi case and a book of Japanese illusion spells. I want to say something, anything, to make her feel better. After seeing what she was like before the other Amelia died, I now know how much she must be hurting, how much it changed her. I know what that feels like. I know what it is to wake up in the morning and think everything is okay, everything's normal. And then you remember. You remember who is missing, and your stomach drops, and the world turns gray, and you want to smash your face into a pillow and scream. I want to tell her that even 8 years later, I still feel that way sometimes. But before I can think of what to say, Darby whispers,
"She was the best there was."
With a sigh, she turns and walks away. She passes a table where Claudia and Victoria and some other seventh graders are sitting, and they whisper as she goes by. Claudia's running some sort of gossip ring and loves to tell anyone who will listen about the tragic death of the other Amelia Jones, as if she'd been the girl's best friend. "Hey, Darby," Claudia calls. "Come sit with us." But Darby ignores them and goes down the stairs, looking angry. Turning back around, I prop my head in my hands. My stomach has sunk to the floor. "I shouldn't be here," I say to Jai. He tilts his head.
"What are you talking about?"
I let my hands fall to the desk, but can't quite look him in the eyes. A part of me wants to tell him the truth, that my being here is just a huge mistake. But even thinking about it makes my ears burn. If everyone found out about my secret, they'd all look at me differently. Not like I was one of them, but like I was a fraud. And coming from Jai, that look would hurt most of all. He's my first friend here, and I don't want to lose that. All I have to do is pass Mrs. LaRue's test in 2 months, and then it won't matter anymore. It'll be like I got in the same way as everyone else. I just have to make sure no one sees through me till then, not even Jai. I just don't want to mess up, you know, like at the hotel.
"Ah, well, just avoid drying spells then."
He shrugs, his fingers jamming the keys as he navigates a zombie-infested street.
"Or you'd probably burn down the whole school."
I punch his arm, and he yelps like his bones are broken and falls to the floor.
"Amelia Jones has slain me," he moans. "Have pity, have pity. I'm just a poor boy from a poor family."
The kids behind us all shush him angrily. And Jai stands and directs an elaborate bow in their direction, basking in their glares.
"Ah, my fans," he sighs, sliding back into his chair. "It's tough being loved by so many."
"Dork."
"That's Mr. Dork to you, Jones."
Jai grins and goes back to playing his game. I nibble my pencil, thinking about the other Amelia, trying to imagine what she was like. Not as a celebrity or a miracle worker, but just as a person. The way Darby knew her. I wonder how she would have fit in here at Mistwick. Something tells me that even here, with all these super talented kids, she'd have stood out. A big fish in a little pond. But I feel like I'm being swallowed up. Back home, I never felt that way. I could play every spell Mrs. Parrish put in front of me. I was always ahead in music craft class, and I practiced twice as much as everyone else. I thought I was good. Now, I'm not sure what I am, or what I have to do to fit in. This is harder than I'd ever dreamed it could be. And it feels like every move I make, I've got the maestros watching over my shoulder and taking notes. Is she good enough? Is she Mistwick material? Or is she just a mistake to be erased? But even more importantly, it's like I can feel my mom watching too, asking the same questions.